I'm Frank Vaughn, and it is January 19th, 2026, and while I work my way through a cold I acquired over the weekend, let's just take a minute to appreciate the beauty of that sound. If you ask me, that sound is just magic. There will be a link in the description. It's not a sponsorship. It's just something I tripped over yesterday while I was nursing this cold, and I thought it was just beautiful. And there's a whole section of YouTube, which is piano covers of metal songs, which is rather underserved. Most metal songs have never been converted to the piano, and I have no idea why, because that's a song I've never even listened to before by a band I've never even listened to, and it's one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever heard. I'm obsessed with it right now. But either way, folks, what are we going to get into today? My head feels like it's a little bit stuffed full of cotton balls, and maybe that's somewhat symbolic because we're all just waiting on Davos. We're all just waiting on the speeches. We're waiting on Trump, of course, and his speech. We're waiting for him to throw down the gauntlet, which I think he will. We're waiting for Mark Carney, who is going to suck up to the globalist order and probably talk about carbon and some other nonsense. And of course, I have tripped right into bot swarms like unlike anything I think I've ever seen on X for posts that are not even that viral. I mean, 1,000, 1,500 likes. I don't know. I'm not really keeping track. Maybe several hundred likes, whatever. But the bots are just crazy. And of course, they're toxic. All the bots are toxic. They're all anonymous. They, very few of them have more than 8 or 10 followers. Some have zero. And of course, they cast aspersions. And what's the problem? The problem is I'm critical of China. That seems to be the common denominator. You're not supposed to talk about China. And one talking point I really want to dispense with right now is when I'm critical of Canada and its relationship with China, I am reminded constantly by the bots and by real individuals alike, because bots are of no utility to anybody if they can't get real people to copy their behavior. And that's really what it's all about. The AI spam that I was talking about on Meta, which, by the way, that 3-day experiment to set up a Facebook page again on Meta is one of the worst mistakes I've ever made, because I am getting inundated by spam now. And the common denominator is it started as soon as I set Meta back up again. But the AI, specifically the artificially generated video content encouraging people to commit violence against law enforcement, is designed to get real-world reactions out of real-world people who don't know the difference between fake video and real video, or are just completely divorced from the reality of what they think they're supporting. They don't understand policy, they don't understand geopolitics, but they do understand emotional manipulation, at least on a subconscious level. They might not understand what's being done to them, but they're certainly responsive to it. And it's the same with the bot swarms on Twitter. It's designed to get real people responding in a real way. It's designed to be mimic. It's designed to be copied. And one of the things that everybody's copying right now is this comparison of the trade relationship between the United States and China and the trade relationship between Canada and China. And I need to discuss the differences. There are not going to be an enormous amount of visual aids today. I just don't have the focus or the attention span for that. This is one tweet, but I've made a series of them over the last 48 hours that kind of encapsulates everything. Canada's response to the United States has been hysterical. There is nothing polite about our panic, nothing reasonable in our position, nothing virtuous or productive in our empty embrace of China. The ignorance and brainwashing are beyond measure. Quiet night, symbolic of many responses that say the exact same thing using different words. The U.S. does more trade with China than Canada could ever hope to. That's right. That is right on so many levels. We tried to embrace trade with America and were shunned China was chosen by the United States to be our trade focus as the only recourse possible. You gaslight. I gaslight. Isn't that interesting? This is common among so many Canadians and bot farms to blame the United States for everything without a moment's introspection or reflection as to how Canada found itself in this position. It's our hysteria that led us down this path. This all started, folks, with reciprocal tariffs and the United States, under the Trump administration, highlighting the very real criminal problem here in Canada. Now, everybody's obsessed with the fact that he talked about Fent. Canada's problems go so far beyond that. And I would say that we are lucky that the Americans haven't used their pulpit, which is much larger than ours, to tell the true story of how corrupt and criminal Canada actually is. Because they know. On this channel, I've highlighted documents written by U.S. agencies during Biden's tenure, highlighting our narcotic trade, our money laundering trade, and our support for terrorist entities. The Americans under Biden know and knew and wrote about it. So have the Europeans, and more than that, so have the RCMP, the CBSA, and CSIS right here in Canada. Everybody knows, except for Quiet Night and all of the people who repeat this talking point. That's how this started. Now, I need to go back a little bit to reciprocal tariffs. What are reciprocal tariffs? Tariffs that match what we charge the United States to do business here. We love tariffs in Canada. We love quotas and we love cartels. And we make people jump through all kinds of hoops just to sell some product right here in Canada. And since we haven't been pulling our weight in NATO, since we have deconstructed our military, since we have allowed Chinese police stations to operate on our soil, to kidnap people on our soil, since we have allowed triads to infiltrate our society at the highest level, since we have allowed Chinese Communist Party influence to overwhelm our government and foreign interference, the United States decided, hey, you haven't been a good partner, and so we're going to charge reciprocal. We're just going to equal it. And we'll give you some punitive, too, so that you have encouragement to fix your mass-scale criminal problems. Now, of course, Canada's reaction was completely hysterical. We're like Big Red. We're like a purple-haired leftist protester, Antifa person screaming on the street with no common sense whatsoever. A vast overreaction at the same time as China, who Mark Carney identified as our principal strategic adversary, was doing the same thing to Canada, was charging us tariffs, was opening salvos in a trade war. And we reacted completely different to China than we did to the United States. The United States was reasonable, folks. The Trump administration was quite reasonable. We were not. Doug Ford threatened to cut off 1.5 million Americans from electricity in what is a crime against humanity. It's the literal definition of it. Be a terrible thing to do. And he laughed while he threatened to do it. We have spent years vaunting our superiority over the United States, even though there isn't any. We spent 4 years under Trudeau during the Biden years, thanking the good Lord that Trump was gone. Our prime minister, his cabinet ministers, they all laughed and scoffed at the rise of Trump to be running in the election and to be reelected, never missing an opportunity to take a cheap shot across the bow. And it's like we keep punching the big guy in the room. We're like this little guy, and we keep punching the big guy. And then when he swung back, he didn't even swing. He just kind of pushed us off like the little boy that we are. We said, look, look, he assaulted us. And we just started screaming and acting like we're the victims. It's hubristic. It's terrible. And you want to talk about gaslighting. When you blame the Americans for the situation, that is the peak of gaslighting. China was not chosen by the United States for us. What reasonable, like what rationale even goes into that statement? That the United States is to blame because our policymakers can't do reasonable things to satisfy our largest trading partner in the world? Now, make no mistake, there's no friends between nations. There's only relationships and geopolitics. And the geopolitics and the relationship with the United States couldn't be clearer. They're irreplaceable. He says the U.S. does more trade with China than Canada could ever hope to. He's correct, which means Canada can never hope to replace the United States with China. Carney came back with very little in the way of commitments and bragged about opening up $7 billion worth of trade. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what we do with the United States. Instead of investing enormous amounts of time in making sure that the USMCA is renegotiated, Canada is heading into a disaster. And people like Quiet Night are applauding Mark Carney taking us to the shed to get fleeced. Our hand is weak. And they just don't seem to realize it. They think they can buy their French's ketchup and put their elbows up and do the chicken dance, and somehow that's going to lead to a positive outcome. It's not. It's actually laying our guard down. And one way or another, I think that's what Carney's plan is. You know, we've been debating on this channel whether or not he's coordinating with the United States. I'm still open to the idea. Or whether he is just the obvious servant of the World Economic Forum in Europe and China, an idea I'm open to, and I still think I lean majoritively in favor of. But regardless of who he serves, regardless of his plans, and they are his plans, to the benefit of his objectives, not Canada's, that much is obvious. None of this is helping Canada. The capital flight that this government has created since he came into office is very real. It's not to the benefit of Canada. I've maintained since the very beginning that he is here to loot. And when he is done looting, he will go home. And do you know where home is? New York, the United States, where all of his wealth is parked. I don't understand why the Quiet Knights of the world can't see it, can't reckon with it. Now, the United States trades with China. That much is very true. There's this thing called inertia. And when it became the policy of the Davos elect, the city elect, the Federal Reserve elect, the financiers and the banks to deindustrialize, not just the United States, but Europe and Canada as well, and outsource all of the manufacturing to third world and developing nations, as we call them now, to be more politically correct, they made fantastic amounts of money while the American and Canadian and European worker got screwed. And it was a great deal for them. We're talking about decades of energetic pursuit of the destruction of our manufacturing base and our ability to do anything except be a resource colony. And this destruction is very advanced in Canada. Another thing that I keep seeing coming up is that Harper gave us the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which essentially gave China secret courts, the ability to invest in Canada without the kind of oversight that Canadian companies would have to abide by, as though that's some kind of point. I'm bipartisan. That's what people don't realize. They want to just label me as some kind of CPC shill or something else. Sometimes I'm called a liberal shill. I'm kind of just in the middle ground trying to find the truth. And the truth is, the Conservative Party of Canada sold us out too. Not just Harper. Maxime Bernier, his right-hand man, they just wanted to sell us to China. So this is a bipartisan thing. And it's a bipartisan thing regardless of what country you look at. You look at the United States, happened under the Democrats, happened under the Republicans. You look at Europe, you can go through and see that it's a bipartisan thing, this decision to deindustrialize. And through, you know, the excuse we got is through the magic of the markets, these countries would spontaneously become liberal democracies. None of that happened, of course. So enter the Trumpian era, and there's all of this inertia, decades of inertia, that needs to be undone. And no one wants to stop trade with China. I certainly don't. But there's a difference between trade and allowing a country to undermine you through trade and other means. So China has been actively undermining the United States. It's not just that manufacturing's gone. It's not just that China's exploiting a trade deficit. But they've also, through investments, attacked through the universities by shipping precursor ingredients for hard drugs into North America. They have undermined the populace. They have bought politicians, particularly in Canada. It's not as bad as in the United States. Like, Canada is way worse than things are in the United States. Way worse. We are undermined completely. It's not even a comparison. And that's the difference. Even though the Chinese have been undermining the United States, they are fully ensconced in Canada. It's not just about trading things. Trading things is fine. It's about the conditions for that trade. When Carney went to China, he was treated like what he is, a subject. Canada is not respected by the Chinese. We are just a resource colony. We are here for their exploitation. They don't like us, folks. That's why they slapped the tariffs down on us in the first place. It's not like when, because people have pointed out that Trump and Xi are set to meet this spring. They're going to have a tete-a-tete. And they look at that and they say, well, if he can do it, so can Carney. There's a big difference. Like when I've brought up on this channel and people are posting it as though it's news to me that Trump has referred to China and the United States as the G2. They say, look at him. He's going for full integration. He's going for partnership. No, no, no. Trump is recognizing a co-equal. And the whole move against Venezuela is about checking that co-equal in the hemisphere. I made the comparison that China and the United States have become like Heimdall and Loki. For those of you who don't know, in Norse mythology, they are destined to kill each other, essentially. They don't win against each other. They kill each other at the exact same time. That's the myth. The United States and China are like that. They're interwoven. But instead of wanting to fight where they both die, they're trying to edge each other for advantage. And that involves a mutual recognition of the deconstruction of the previous order. This globalist order, this Davos order, this city order. Both are incentivized to not just end that, but to reposition themselves in their respective hemispheres so that they can flourish in a multipolar world, which is what it's really about. That's what's happening. To compare the Canadian relationship with China, which is as a relationship between a subject and a king, and the United States and Chinese relationship, which is the relationship between two sovereigns at this point, that's where it's pushing. It might have gone differently had Donald Trump lost. And just pausing there for a second, this isn't to deify Donald Trump. He's capable of making mistakes. And I have criticized him on this channel, and I'll continue to. But the fact is, it seems very clear that he is working to upend the Davos order, and even if there's excesses committed in that pursuit in the fixing of the United States, because you have to remember, a lot of bad things have happened. Millions of illegals have been allowed to flow into the United States. Drugs, unending cultural brain rot and destruction, a lot of times funded in the background by the Chinese, by the CCP. All of these things have to be undone, and they have to be undone fairly quickly. Like I said in a previous video, this is the Game of Thrones. You either win or you die. Things are going to happen very quickly. And that doesn't mean that coming out the backside, if Trump is successful, because success is not guaranteed, if he is successful, that there won't come a time where the people will need to reassert themselves against the Trump administration or its successor administration. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't see that far into the future. I'm not even certain that this plan, this execution, this idea that they're trying to realize will actually succeed. There's a lot of headwinds. But I wouldn't stand in the way of it. And I do not believe sacrificing Canada, which is what we're doing, we're sacrificing the country to try and throw a wrench into the wheels of this change in the United States. And people are supporting it. I mean, it's not just bots, actual, real, verified people think that this is wisdom, engaging with China. Even though, first off, we didn't get much out of them. But what we have to pay in return is our sovereignty. Everybody wants to talk about the United States threatening our sovereignty. Our sovereignty is already lost. We lost it to China. We lost it to Davos. We lost it to the WEF. We lost it to the United Nations and the SDI, or the Strategic Development Initiatives, the Carbon Con, carbon net neutrality, all of this nonsense. We lost our sovereignty. The people are not sovereign anymore. They've never really been sovereign in Canada. For all the reasons I've highlighted in my videos, we don't elect the government, we elect parliament. Government's appointed. They rule through the governor general. We're subjects to a king. Maybe that's why we're so comfortable being supplicants before the all-powerful CCP in China. We're used to that relationship. We're used to bowing before sovereigns. We don't really have a tradition of genuine and true freedom in a lot of this country. I think the seed is planted in Western Canada. But the millions of us, and I need to remind specifically Americans of the millions of us that are not like that, are completely outnumbered by the millions more who just love their subjugation. And that poses a real and pressing problem, not just for Canadians, but for the people we share this continent with. China cannot be allowed to rule Canada or turn Canada into a proxy. The Americans cannot stand by and let that happen. There is no North America. There is no Fortress North America. There is no future under Chinese dominion. Now, I said in my tweet that Canada's response to the United States has been beyond hysterical, and I think that case is self-evident. There was an opportunity. There was an opportunity to convey a message to our American partners that we had made mistakes over the last 10 years, that the government of the Liberals under Justin Trudeau made fools of themselves, that we've actually let our guard down. We have denuded our military. We have allowed China to ride roughshod. We have allowed financing of Hezbollah and Hamas and mass protest for the same to overtake Canada, that we have a huge crime problem that's international in scope and scale. But not a single politician did that. Trump put a focus on us, every single politician in one way or another went towards the whole elbows up thing. Now, I know the Conservative Party didn't say elbows up, but they certainly positioned themselves as they were going to be tougher with the United States than the Liberals would be. And you know something? I think they're right. I think they're absolutely right. This labeling of Polyev as the pro-Trump guy in Canada, while Carney literally plays into the U.S. hands, you see, the more we engage with China, the bigger a target is painted on our back. And we don't have the power to back up our position because we've denuded our national sovereignty. We've become a post-national state. We have weakened the national fabric of Canada. And one of the things that was highlighted yesterday, and one of the tweets that's received some of the worst vitriol, is when I said I agreed with Steve Bannon. Now, one of the things that Bannon highlighted yesterday was that 25% of Canada's population are new immigrants that hate the United States. We are a security threat to the United States, and they can't allow it to continue if they intend to survive as a sovereign nation, and they intend to. They're not post-national. They're not a nation with no core identity, the way that Canada has proudly declared itself. America has an identity. I envy it. I wish my nation had have engaged with an identity as strong as Americanism. But we didn't. And it's past tense now. The bill's coming due. We could have engaged a message of fixing this diplomatically. We could have come out, we could have had a political leader come out and say, you know what? America is genuinely important to Canada. We haven't carried our weight. We've made mistakes. And this Liberal government has been so insulting, and we want to fix it. But not a single politician would carry that message. And you know why? Because they wouldn't get elected on it. Because the majority of the Canadian population is completely delusional about this relationship with the United States. They actually see themselves as victims. They see Canada as guiltless. They refuse to see the facts of how corrupt and overrun this country is. Even though they can't use public transit safely anymore, they don't believe we have a crime and drug problem. They don't see the international scale of it, even though it's visible in front of our eyes. You can witness it in small towns on the Trans-Canada Highway. that have no business being involved in Eritrean or Somali crime, but you can see the evidence of it with your own eyes if you do that trip. So we're moving past that point. Now we're talking about deploying troops to Greenland. We have Mark Carney, who clearly has never read Article 5 or Article 1 of NATO, saying that, you know, NATO's clear. If the United States moves on Greenland, we'll have to go to war. With what army? What are we doing here? This is Canada's a nation of virtue signaling that gets us into trouble. So, for instance, we do land acknowledgments. We've been doing land acknowledgments. We can't even have a hockey game without talking about Turtle Island. So we've been doing all this stuff. We've been talking about every child matters, even though clearly in this country every child doesn't matter because we're perfectly okay with sterilizing children as long as it's done in the name of gender ideology. So every child doesn't matter. We talk about all these graves, but we haven't actually pursued an evidentiary basis for all of the outrage. Those land acknowledgments, all of that activity, all of the virtue signaling has turned into real world problems. Conflicting title claims. It's not enough that the Cowichan tribe won title over a chunk of Richmond, but now there's multiple tribes who are claiming the same territory. Now we're going to have land claims coming from the United States in our court because they have a native population too. And we've given it validity. There are lawsuits ongoing all over this nation which are throwing title into doubt. What mortgage company? What person? What investor? What buyer? How are you supposed to even get financing when nobody knows who owns the land? All of our virtue signaling has immense consequences, and we're doubling down on that with Carney threatening to go to war with the United States to defend Greenland under NATO. You know, Article 5 and Article 1, Article 1 in particular, applies to the relationship between NATO members, doesn't spell out a kinetic response as automatic. It just doesn't. And Article 5 doesn't apply. But everybody's talking about Article 5 and Article 1. Less Article 1. Mostly it's Article 5, but clearly nobody's even read it. There's no guarantee of a kinetic response. And even if we were to engage a kinetic response over Greenland, it would just lead to the annexation of Canada. If we were to actually oppose that move, you have to understand that Trump is correcting, whether you agree with him or not is irrelevant. He's correcting a perceived imbalance within NATO, but also in the relationship between Europe and America. Whether you like it or not, the United States has been paying the bills for a long time at a great benefit to the Europeans and to Canada, which can't even respond to intercept a Cessna at Vancouver Airport. We rely on the Americans for that. Who intercepted the balloons that were floating around? It was American jets. It wasn't ours. Who has a readiness problem? Who has a funding problem? It's all Canada. And so, after being robbed in 2020, after all of the shenanigans of 2016 to 2020, and then the shenanigans from 2020 to 2024, well, this version of Trump is without patience. He's not so much into talking anymore. He's into action, and he's going for it. Look, he's approaching 80 years old. He's only got this opportunity to do it. He's going for it. He's going for the whole thing. He's going to overthrow the city and overthrow Davos, or he's going to fail in that pursuit. And that failure would be bad for all of us. Even if you don't like his approach, you shouldn't be opposing the objective. And I mean the Occam's razor cuts that Carney is here to sacrifice Canada to slow down Trump, which means all of you suffer. All of us suffer because we're all in this boat together. So all that is to say, the relationship between the United States and China is not identical to the relationship between Canada and China. We are subjects. The Americans are co-equals, and they are asserting their co-equality. very kinetically. When the United States talks, I mean, the Mexican president has admitted that she's controlled by the cartels, that the cartels are running Mexico. When America finally gets around to dealing with that problem, it's a liberation. And those cartels, by the way, are much more closely aligned with China than they are the Mexican government. So when the United States targets Maduro, they're targeting China. When the United States targets Mexico, they're targeting China. And to another extent, they're also targeting Europe. There's a relationship there. But when we're talking about Canada, the problem is acute. It's our fault. We have not been good partners in this relationship. And instead of hubris, I wish we had the ability to introspect and reflect on just what Canada has been up to so that we could actually build a political movement in the country or even interest in a movement to rectify those problems. If you want Canada, you want to protect our sovereignty, you have to address the sovereignty-destroying practices under both the Liberals and the Conservative Party of Canada. It's a long-term trend line. One of the reasons I think separatism is so popular here in the West is that even if they don't know the details, I think the people here instinctually see it. Canada has not been good for the people. And so the common refrain that I hear is independence first, but statehood would be okay. It's not the first choice of people, but it's better than the status quo because the status quo has led Canada into this perdition. And under the Liberals and under Carney, for one reason or another, they're doubling down on the approach that's broken the back of this nation. And to summarize, as we wait for Davos to get underway and we wait to hear what people say, Canada is not in a position to dictate terms, and virtue signaling, pretending that we're tough guys, pretending that we have our big boy pants on and we've got a big seat at the table, pretending isn't enough to get us through this one. We have to face reality. We are in a very weakened state, and the United States cannot afford to have a weak nation in bed with China on its northern border, and you're living in the warning time right now. This is the calm before the storm. As the United States focus is in the Caribbean, as the U.S. focus is on Europe and Davos and the city and Greenland, our clock is ticking down to when their focus is going to come squarely on Canada. Look, they've got the receipts, folks. They know the game. They've known it for years. I've covered it on this channel, the things that they're identifying about Canada, which largely are confirmed by our own government. The ignorance of the Canadian people in general is what allows the situation to continue. The elbows up nonsense, one of the most empty movements, one of the most vacuous statements I've ever seen come out of a nation. The Americans know. Our politicians know. And eventually, they're going to blaze it through a megaphone so that everybody can hear it. And unfortunately for us, we don't have the ability to stand against the wind. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, please consider supporting it. Sorry this one was so mellow. But like I said, the cold has robbed me of my usual eloquence. I'll see you in the next one.